from Parks and Recreation Department. Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The department is here today to start phase one of their agency review. We expect to do the agency overview today and probably get through their priorities and then do performance measures tomorrow. So with that, I would introduce Tim Wood, who is the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and take it from there.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Tim Wood, and I'm the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And I'd like to take the opportunity this afternoon to kind of walk you through an overview of our department, a general overview of how we're funded, the programs that we manage, and an introduction to some of the issues that you'll probably see in more detail as we move into phase two. I was going to take you through an overview of the sort of the top level department wide, and then for a little bit more detail, I'll ask my assistant directors of Operations Administration and Heritage Conservation to give you a little more detail on each of their programs. Now, you can generally follow along with me in the book. On page one is just a recitation, if you will, of the statutes, articles in the Constitution which relate to our department. Our statutory authority is found in ORS Chapter 390, portions of 358, portions of 97, and our administrative rules for our department are found in Chapter 736. Page 2 is just an overview of what our mission is. It is succinctly stated, we provide and protect outstanding natural, scenic, cultural, historic, and recreational sites for the education and enjoyment of present and future generations. And hopefully you'll be able to make the connection as we talk about our budget, about how our budget is being directed toward meeting current needs while looking toward future needs as well. Page 3, after Measure 66 was passed in 1998 by about 66% of the voters, our commission adopted a strategic plan. And that strategic plan is what we refer to as Target 2014. The significance there is that in 2014, that's when the ballot measure 66 lottery funds, which we receive now as one of our major revenue items, would be automatically referred back to the voters. Actually, be referred back to the voters in 2013. Target 2014 has provided a strategic direction for achieving the objectives that were set out in ballot measure 66. We reviewed and updated the Target 2014 strategic plan in 2004, and we will periodically update it as we progress closer to Target 2014 or closer to the year 2014 to ensure that we are on the right track in achieving what we wanted to achieve. We have eight measures. Our performance measures are really derived from the eight strategies that are laid out there in Target 2014, and you'll see that as we talk about our performance measures. There are three general components to our strategic plan, and that is to help us meet immediate operational demands of our state park system, to help us prepare our system for the future, and also at assisting local governments and other communities in meeting the needs for parks and open spaces in their communities. Page 4 is one of only two organizational diagrams I'll show you. The highlight here, or something I'd like to point out here, is the fact that we do have a lot of citizen involvement in our department. We have several commissions and many other advisory councils and review councils that aren't shown on this chart who participate in our rulemaking, our planning processes, our regulatory reviews, and most particularly in our grant programs. So there is a whole lot of citizen involvement. We have three commissions or councils which are appointed by the governor. That's the Oregon Heritage Commission, the Historic Trails Advisory Council, and the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee. Those commissions or councils report, they're independent, but we provide the staff support for those organizations. And then on the right-hand side, you'll see that we have three major committees or councils there. That's the ATV Account Allocation Committee that's appointed by our commission, Recreation Trails Advisory Council, and then the Oregon Commission on Historic Cemeteries, which is appointed by myself. Our commission is appointed by the governor, and we have seven commissioners. Those seven members represent the five congressional districts, and we have two at-large representatives. They're nominated by the governor, confirmed by the Senate, and serve for four-year terms, can serve up to two terms. Our commission really has the responsibility of setting the policy, the financial direction for the department. They approve the department's budget and participate in its development. They also have the authority to adopt administrative rules for operation of the department. They hire and, I almost said hire and fire me, they hire me. So far they've only done that. And also they have responsibility for, they have the authority for acquisition of real property. We have right now one position which is vacant. The position that's held east of the Cascades by Bobby Connor is due to be vacant as her term will expire here shortly, and nominations for both of those positions are at the governor's office and should be coming to the Senate shortly. On page six, this is the second of the two organizational charts I'll put before you, and I'm not going to walk through each of these boxes, but I think the one point that I would like to make is this is the staff of our organization. These are the people that are responsible for delivering services to our customers and for really shaping the reputation of the department with the public. We've got in this budget 539 FTEs, 804 positions. Many of those positions are seasonal positions that we bring on board during the summer season to help with operation of the parks. We're organized into three major organizational elements. That's operations. Dave Wright is our operations director. This is really where we manage and operate our state park system. The properties that we manage and operate provide to the public. This is where most of the public comes in contact with the department. And again, in large measure, this is where our reputation is made. In the Heritage Conservation Division, James Hamrick is the assistant director there. We have a couple of responsibilities. We have sort of a regulatory responsibility with regard to the state's responsibilities under the National Historic Preservation Act, and we have some federal funding that's provided to us for carrying out those responsibilities, and also responsibilities for the carrying out the laws, the state laws regarding historic preservation. And then the third element of our major element of the department is the administration, and that's our assistant director is Jana Tindall. Essentially, the administration section of our department is our business management functions, information services, personnel, public services. But I'd also like to point out that we have an internal auditor position in our department who conducts audits of all kinds of activities within our department. You can well imagine with campgrounds and operations flung across the state that we have a lot of cash handling that we do, and we have a very active audit program to be sure that we're maintaining the standards that we've established, as well as looking at other business practices within the department. So that's generally how we're organized. Our programs and responsibilities are generally laid out on page 7. Under parks and land use, these activities fall under our operations division. Again, this is management and operation of the park system on the ground. Oversight and management of programs like the Ocean Shore Management Program, the State Scenic Waterways Program, the Willamette Greenway Program, and we also have a program that we call the Parks and Prisons Partnership. That's a program that was established back in the 97-99 biennium, I believe, and it's where we use the resources of the Department of Corrections to provide work crews to do work on the ground in parks for maintenance, restoration of facilities, renovation of trails, provide general labor. Yes?
If I can recall, I think it was two sessions ago, and you were using 66 funds, and there was quite a backlog of maintenance. Are you going to cover where you are and getting caught up on the backlog somewhere down the line here?
Yes, Representative Krieger, just a couple slides, and I'll be there, and I'll talk to that in some detail.
And there's the performance measure on that as well.
I noticed the performance measure here.
Yeah. I would just like to point out that on this Parks and Prisons partnership that we have, this has worked out very well for us. We've had a number of crews over time. Probably at any one time we have about seven crews out of state facilities and seven or eight crews out of county facilities with the local sheriff's department. They construct things like our brand new cabins that we are constructing at Lapine State Park have all been constructed through the Inside Oregon Enterprises program. They also build our picnic tables, fire rings, many of the sort of facilities and that we need to operate the parks. Additionally, as part of this, as I mentioned, we're county crews, but we also hire youth crews through the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, as well as through Northwest Youth Corps to do a lot of this work.
Tim?
Yes.
Thanks. These folks out there building stuff, so you track those folks when they get out of prison, do they use those skills out in the population? I hope so. That's what I'm asking.
Representative Schauffler, yes, that's correct. We have those people who serve on those crews are, first of all, minimum security prisoners. They are overseen by a guard that comes from the institution and are further supervised by park staff. And we try to keep the interface between park visitors and crews generally to a minimum. We really haven't had any issues with that. The risk is always there, but we really haven't had any issues in that. Under outdoor recreation and planning assistance, we're responsible for planning for the outdoor recreation needs of the state, and we work with other jurisdictions in the process of developing what the needs are, identifying where the gaps are, who the service provider should be, and assisting them primarily through our grant programs in helping to meet those needs. In heritage conservation, a list of the programs of which we're responsible. The last bullet there talks about a state and federal tax incentive programs for Oregon historic properties. I would just point out that we administer the nation's oldest tax incentive for historic preservation. That was established in 1975. This is further reflected somewhat in one of our performance measures that we'll probably talk about in a little more detail later on. And then department-wide administration is our back office or our business functions of the department. On the performance measures summary, they look at those items that are on the bottom right-hand corner there. These are the basic functions of the department as they relate to our mission. And we have 14 performance measures. We have one measure, about benchmark 90 in the Oregon benchmark that we use to measure performance. On page 8, this provides an overview of the revenue sources for the department. I'd just like to point out that our revenue base at the current time is varied. As you will note, lottery is becoming an increasingly larger portion of our revenue stream. In the past, part of that piece of that pie that was lottery had been general fund, and you'll note that there's no general fund in this budget. Park user fees continue to make up about 17% or so. That's from overnight use and day use camping and day use fees primarily, and fees from reservations from the reservation system. I'd like to point out the RV registration that shows net there. That's the amount of money that would come through the registration of recreational vehicles that's dedicated to the department. In addition to that, there's another $9 million in RV registration fees that are passed directly to counties for operation and maintenance of county park systems. So we will obviously talk in more detail as we talk the details of the budget. The only other thing I'd like to point out is under the ATV revenues. Those are dedicated revenues that come to the department through unrefunded gas tax, the sale of ATV permits, and a small amount of money from revenue from the sale sale for participation of folks who participate in education and safety training programs. That money is dedicated for ATV purposes. Page 9 is an overview of the expenditures of the department for the 05-07 budget that you are considering. In the category of grants, I'd just like to point out that there's a whole host of grant programs that we operate. There's the Land and Water Conservation Fund, what we call the Local Opportunity Grants Program. That includes funds for the ATV grant program, the revenue you saw above, Recreation Trails Program, and some heritage grants. All this money in the grant program is passed through the department to cities, counties, and other jurisdictions for accomplishment of recreational facility improvement or acquisition development at the local level. The 41% of our expenditures there that are operations, again, is the bulk of our business. That's the day-to-day operation of park properties on the ground. Our facility investments program, there's $37 million in there. That includes, in terms of limitation, that includes a lot of things. It includes some limitation for bringing grants into leverage money within the facility investment program. It includes a $21 million facility investment program specifically. There's also money there from the Oregon State Marine Board that we get through for grants, or we plan to get through grants, and also a couple of some revenue from a couple of our program option packages, such as the Harris Canyon State Park development.
Mr. Chair, I know it's after lunch, and I always have a hard time making sure I hear everything and don't doze off or something. But two questions on both of these two graphs. Did you explain why the beginning balance was $30 million? Did I miss that? Why is it as big as it is? I'll do that one first, and I'll go.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, sure. The beginning balance, a large portion of the funds in our beginning balance are monies which have been obligated but have yet to be expended, and most of that, a large amount of that is through our grant program. And we'll talk about that in more detail when we talk about performance measures, I'm sure. But it's money which has been obligated to local, a large amount of it. It's money which has been obligated to local communities but hasn't been spent.
And then the other part of my question is at the other end, facility investments. You got a lot of parks out there, and I don't often get to see where those facility investments go. You said $21 million. That sounds like you could make a dazzling difference in a lot of places, and we don't see them much. Can you tell us where some of the construction projects, some of the bigger ones are these days?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Senator Shields, I'd be happy to do that. Some of the projects that we have accomplished with the facility investment program have been the renovation of South Falls Lodge at Silver Falls, the installation of a new sewage treatment collection system and sewage treatment system at Silver Falls State Park, the renovation and upgrade of the South Camp Loop at Fort Stevens. We've, in the last two biennia or so, we have renovated probably 30-some different restroom shower buildings around the state. We have in our current program this year three major upgrades to electrical systems at Cape Blanco. Lost it here. Cape Blanco, Collier State Park, and Tugman. Thank you. Tugman State Park. We have restoration of Vista House in the Columbia River Gorge that's ongoing now. Senator Shields, I'd be happy to provide you with a little more detailed list of what we've accomplished.
That's probably more appropriate, but I'm glad to hear some of the things that you've mentioned.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, the department has also been requested by budget note to provide a report to the subcommittee on the facility investments program and what it's accomplished to date. So that report will be coming forward probably in phase two.
Okay.
Thank you. Following up on something Senator Shields talking about, the beginning balance of $30 million, when you look at the difference between your estimated revenue and your expenditures on page 89, there is a $28 million difference there. Is the beginning balance, those are grants, different from the grant program that you have on page 9? Is that what that is?
Mr. Chair, Senator, Senator Nelson, that's correct, because what we're showing in the beginning balance on the chart at the top is this biennium's funds. And this would be projected to be what the new revenue that would be allocated out through grant programs in the coming biennium.
Just to follow up, it seems to me that maybe on that pie chart you ought to show previous grants or something in the power of the SBR or something. I'm just kind of confused because they didn't balance.
On page 10 begins to show a little bit more of the picture of our funding. Although this chart is intended to show and does show expenditures or projected expenditures, it's also reflective of sort of the revenue picture over the past few years. Again, what I'd like to point out, if you go back to 97-99, although it isn't shown on this chart, there was about $11 million of general fund in 97-99, which was replaced in 99-01 with the funds from the lottery revenue. Additionally, in 97-99, there was $15 million in our budget from a sale of a bond, which was a lottery-backed bond, which started our facility investment programs. That was prior to the ballot measure 66 being approved by the voters. So in 99-01, you can see that lottery became a significant portion of our department's revenue stream and has continued to grow over the years. We are looking at 70-some million dollars of revenue in this biennium projected. Again, a large, significant portion of that growth is due to part of it is due to the change in lottery commissions that has already taken place, as well as to just plain growth in the lottery program. Park user fees have generally stayed flat over the last 10 years or so. Our goal would be to, since lottery continues to make such a contribution here, our goal would be not to look at expanding our fee programs or providing any fee increases, but as we get closer to 2014 and we try to predict what the future of the lottery funds and the department will be, we'll obviously need to make some contingency plans about how to do that.
Representative Krieger, you have a question?
Yes. Tim, last year, times running together, but there was a move to increase user fees, the daily fees at the parks on the coast. I had a lot of resistance. Could you address the reason for that? Not the resistance, but it was kind of preparation to start the department down the road of self-sufficiency, and I didn't understand at the time how much that I figured that was going to generate to help offset future needs.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, you are correct. About 2003, I believe we undertook a review of our day use fee program. We currently have 26 parks or 27 parks on our day use fee program, and one of the questions that our commission wanted to address is, are we equitable? Is the locations at which we're charging those fees equitable across the system? If not, should we also be expanding the system to, first of all, provide equity, if you will, so that users in one portion of the state aren't really subsidizing the use of other users in other portions of the state, as well as also perhaps to begin to build our user fee base for the eventual loss of lottery funds to the department. And we looked at expanding, I forget now exactly how many parks we were considering expanding it to. If I remember correctly, it would have brought in $1.1 million or so based on no increase in the fee. It would just be applying our current $3 fee at more locations. After we had gone through quite a public process with that and done a lot of analysis, and the fact that lottery funds or lottery projections continued to grow, the commission concluded that maybe we ought to set that aside for a while. We really couldn't make the case for needing the additional revenue, and so it was determined not to increase the fee or not to expand the program.
Member Bates?
Oh, a couple of questions just real quick. Concerning lottery funds, I assume, maybe incorrectly, you're not planning to bring line games or lottery into the parks themselves. Is that true? I just wanted to be sure about that. The lottery support sunsets in about 10 years. When's that sunset?
9 years.
9 years?
Yeah, 2014. 10 years?
Are you concerned that at that time that this will be sunsetted and not put back to the people for a vote?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, no, because when the ballot measure was passed, it was passed with a provision that it would automatically be referred back to the voters.
And I believe that passed with a pretty substantial number.
Approximately 66% or so.
Right. So what I heard there for a moment was you had some concerns about loss of lottery funds and had to be totally self-sufficient. Did I misinterpret what you said?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we need to plan for whatever contingencies might occur. I mean, we need to be ready for what the voters may or may not do in 2013 with regard to renewal. We hope that the investments we're making and the way we are using the lottery dollars now will convince voters that that is a good use of lottery funds. However, we need to be prepared if other economic conditions or for whatever social conditions or reasons there might be at the time, it's not approved. We still have a state park system that we want to operate, provide to the public, and continue to be proud of. And so we need to begin, as we approach 2013, to be making those plans.
Senator Shields.
I'm going to ask a question. It could get me in trouble with the committee, I suppose. But have you made a business case or thought about making a business case for taking some of the lottery fund money and using it to actually do some advertising which could increase park user fees, thereby getting out your message about what you are doing to enhance the facilities and upgrade things, and thereby putting yourself in a better position when ballot measure 66 comes around? Has there been any thought to that, or is there a business case that can be made? I mean, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle were always telling me I got to make a business case for everything. Right, David?
It's take a long time to get that message out.
Give me a break.
Regardless of the wise guy that sits beside me, would you answer the question?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, certainly. We have a portion of our budget that we do dedicate toward advertising and promoting state parks and the system that we have. One of the sort of limiting factors on our ability to generate revenue is our capacity. We have plenty of camping capacity, camping being primarily the largest revenue fee that we have. During the summer times and in season, we have a very high occupancy rate, and so we are somewhat limited by how many campsites we can sell. We are trying to address that, maybe not necessarily from the revenue enhancement standpoint, but for the purposes of meeting the need by adding additional camping at some different locations or expanding camping. By and large, to make up the difference here, that would take a huge expansion. But it is a point that we have considered and in some cases have put in place.
I wasn't suggesting you could ever make up the difference, but you could enhance your public presence.
Please continue. Wait a moment. Representative Krieger has a
Mr. Chair,
question.
Tim, could you talk to us a little bit about the acquisition dollars that are available under 66, Measure 66, and then kind of go from there to the number of parks we have and number of acres that Oregon has in parks, and if you don't have it today, compare that to some of the adjoining states as far as facilities and size and acres of facilities.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, in our budget request and in our current budget for this biennium 03-05, we have $7 million identified from the lottery fund for acquisition. And of that $7 million, our current park acreage is about 95,000 acres. If you compare our users, the number the number of users we have per acre. I believe we're about eighth in the nation in that regard, in terms of having eighth highest in the nation for number of users per acre. We don't have probably by maybe three times as much acreage in parks as the Washington State system has. Representative Krieger, I can get you more precise details on what the surrounding states have in terms of their acreage. But I do know that we, in terms of total acreage, are one of the smaller systems in the western part of the United States.
Committee, I'd like to have you understand that Curry County's got about 11,000 to 12,000 acres of the total park system, yet it's a small county, and the rest of the county, over 70% of that county, is federal, which is doing nothing for us. So their tax base to run county government is extremely small with very little potential to grow. And as we buy more public land, take it out of production, it long-term, if this thing goes on for 50 years, there's going to be places in the state that are going to be impacted by the fact that continue to buy more and more land, and it comes off the tax roll. I think Senator Farioli has talked about that in a major 66, OWEB, those types of dollars.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cree, I understand what you're saying, and I certainly don't disagree with that. In our case, most of those properties, we try to generate some revenue there, which has some local benefit in return to, through tourism, as well as those parks where we have overnight camping. We are subject to the city and county lodging taxes as well, and so that's one way we put some of that money back into the system.
Senator Shields.
Well, just a comment there. Isn't the problem somewhat that some of the most rural counties have the most appealing environment for the state park system? I'd say bring lots of them to Multnomah County. We can absorb that, but there's no place to put a park, up there. It is in those rural counties that Senator Farioli and others are concerned about.
That's one of the reasons last session, Mr. Chair, there was a real consensus, even from the rural legislators, to make sure that Washington County started developing that. And we felt real good about being able to put a facility like that online for people up in the metro area. So it wasn't a matter of rural versus the urban. And I think it's a big, big important thing we did for, up in the valley.
Mr. Chair, could I?
Go right, please respond.
That's a good point. And as we talk about our land acquisitions in more detail later on, we are developing a strategy to be sure that we're targeting locations where the need is the greatest. And we think that sort of intuitively, the need is the greatest nearer population centers. And so that kind of speaks to what you were talking about there.
Okay, please continue.
Thank you. Moving on to page 11, just a sort of a snapshot of some of the key points in the last 10 years or so relating to the department. And I'll not go through each of these, but in 1994 we created what we call the discovery season. And really the discovery season was kind of to what Senator Shields was talking about, was trying to get more people into the parks in times of the year that traditionally our parks hadn't been well used. And so we expanded operations in the fall and the shoulder seasons in the spring to make more parks available during the off-season and also to help to expand our revenue base. This is also the year in which we put two yurts in our system and sort of started the whole program that our Oregon State Park system is known for is our yurt program.
Not jerks, yurts.
Okay. I thought you said jerks for a bit.
I was going to say that.
Strike that from the record.
Do that in the hot
to clarify, he said yurts. Please continue.
In 1996, we introduced a centralized reservation system. That was a major move to improve customer service, although probably a lot of people at the time would have told you that there was no customer service involved in that. But it has turned out to be a very well-accepted, efficiently run operation, and we virtually get no complaints with regard to our reservation system nowadays. Additionally, we have moved about 30% of the total number of reservations we have off of the phone lines and onto the Internet. So now folks can go onto the Internet, you know, at 2 a.m. in the morning and do their shopping for park facilities. And that's been steadily growing.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What percentage of the parks can you access through this program, especially for weekends? I ran into a lot of my constituents and myself. They try to call in or get on the Internet, and we're blocked on weekends from certain parks. I mean, the problem is, what time you got to get there Friday to get a site? You know, that's the old Oregon Lottery game we all play. So what percentage of parks are actually in the system?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I believe we have 26 parks of our camping parks that are on the reservation system. And that we do not manage yurts and cabins. You can check on the Internet and you can find out availability, but you can't make reservations. But for reservations at campsites, you can do that for all those reservation parks. We also maintain a series of parks that we don't put on the reservation system simply to help meet the sort of the spontaneous need that folks need to have satisfied when they want to go camping someplace. And we also, if you call in through our reservation system and you can't, you know, find a reservation at the park you like to have, our folks will help you try to find a park nearby or something else that will fit your needs. In 98, of course, we talked about Measure 66, which was passed by the voters. In 2001, our commission adopted Targets 2014, again, which established the 8 goals or strategies for guiding our department through the year 2014, and updated again in 2004.
Yes.
Regarding the salmon license plates, I'm just a little confused because my understanding is that those monies went to OWEP to fund habitat restoration projects. So, were we talking about the same thing and you received some of that money to do restoration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dinkfelder, that's correct. A portion of that was dedicated to the department. And we try to further dedicate a portion of that revenue that we get toward the general intent of the salmon license plate was toward stream habitat restoration projects. In fact, you'll see one of our program option packages, which helps us sort of isolate that money from the operations side of our budget so that we will ensure that that's exactly where that money goes.
Just a clarification.
Sure. Follow up.
So that money goes to fund restoration projects in our parks. I mean, I'm trying to just clarify.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingle, that's correct. Okay. Right. It's on park properties.
All right. Thank you.
Page 12, please. Talk about the economic impact. I would just like to point out that we do have a presence statewide, especially in rural areas of the state. And that's the location where many of our busiest parks are located. You know, our mission supports the governor's budget principles by contributing to Oregon's quality of life and also to contributing to economic development, especially in rural areas. This chart notes that sort of our usage data, but it also points out that we could estimate that there's approximately $491 million annually that goes back into the economy as a result of use and visitation at state parks. I would point out that there's also an additional $56 million estimated that goes back into the economy as a result of our facility investment program and our grant programs. Page 13 would tell you how some of that money gets back into the local economy. And that's through the use of contracting with local contractors. Much of, I would point out here that we had about 240 contracts already written in this biennium for expenditure of funds for park operation purposes and for our facility investment program. Most all of that goes back to contractors located in the state, and much of it is regional or local to the park and where the work is actually being done. Our staff that we have are not really our contracts are not really our construction staff. The staff we have in our engineering section are really there to administer the contracts and provide project management. Again, most of this work, and you can get a wide variety, a sample of what the wide variety of kinds of contracting we do with the private firms is located there on page 13. There are beginning on page 14, there are several key aspects of our budget. First of all, facilities, and this will get hopefully to some of the questions that Representative Krieger raised a few minutes ago. One of the hallmarks of our department is that we are known to the public for having clean, well-maintained facilities. And in order to do that, we have been continuing to make an investment over the years and will continue to do so. We're trying to upgrade our facilities to meet current standards with regard to accessibility, as well as to bring in newer technologies so that the materials that we use are more sustainable, durable over time, and also are respectful, if you will, in terms of conserving the resources that we use, thus ending up with a conservation of resources as well as hopefully helping us maintain or reduce our operating costs. We fund facility maintenance through several different portions of our budget. Some of it is in our operations budget. That's sort of the preventive maintenance, day-to-day janitorial, custodial stuff. We have established some sinking funds for management of some of our housing facilities. Our Wolf Creek Inn facility down in Wolf Creek, and our yurts and cabins. We have funding that goes into this program through our facility investment program. We have some funds which are transferred from ODOT to help maintain highways and state parks, and then we just get grants and donations to help leverage funds, as well as just donations that come to the department for some specific purpose.
Senator Bates.
Is there, thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any reason you've not accelerated this program and closed the gap completely?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, the reason is while we're continuing to build down the backlog in our system, we also need to be adding some capacity as well as preparing for the future. And that's why we've made some split in how we invest the facility investment money. We're trying to address primarily the backlog with that, and then a portion of it is to improve the system to be able to gain some efficiencies. An example would be the renovation of the South Camp Loop at Fort Stevens, and in the 97, 99, or 99, 01 biennium, we renovated the North Camp Loop at Fort Stevens. That upgraded utilities, helped us with water conservation, reduced our maintenance costs because our utility systems were breaking down. So even when we're enhancing the system, there's some benefits to help keep us from building a backlog as well. But we have been investing on both sides, primarily for backlog and some to help ours, modernize our system and be prepared to meet future demands.
Just actually a statement. It's obviously a management decision. It just seems strange to me that one of the few agencies in state government that is pretty flush, frankly. Everyone else is cutting, and you're seeing 12, 13% increases. You carry ending balance of over 12% of your budget, or thereabouts, which most of us carrying 3 to 4%. You're putting $7 million into acquisition of new property each biennium. I'm surprised to have a backlog at all, frankly. I mean, it's just a question of where you want to put your resources. This backlog represents, to me, inefficiency and waste of campsites. That when you get rid of the backlog, things are better, nice for people to go to, and I assume more efficient. So it's your management decision, obviously, it's your department. It just seems strange you still have a backlog at all, and that it isn't going to sort of clean it up and take it as a number one priority, sort of taking care of what you've got before you start going out and buying more. But that's just me, and you're doing what you think is a balanced approach to this, I assume.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that's correct. We could have taken all the money and directed it specifically to backlog, but we also, it was a policy decision to also begin to develop the system for the future, as while also trying to build down the backlog. And we've laid out here a program through 2014 that allows us to build that backlog down to what would be a reasonable or an acceptable, a manageable level, if you will, while still being able to add some and enhance the system as well.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Tim, does this chart take into account the policy option package you have for increasing resources to this program?
No, it does not.
So, Senator Bates, they are they do have a policy option package to increase the investment that they're making in this program that will drive that number, the backlog down faster, I'm assuming faster.
That's correct.
It could be in part of your presentation later.
That's one of the questions, Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that's correct. That's one of the questions we're working to respond to LFO on, the effect of that additional funds.
Thank you.
Tim, in looking at the chart on page 15, preventative maintenance dollars are pretty static from 97 through 2017. Wouldn't those dollars have to increase as you acquire more properties and expand the system? Because it would seem to me that if your preventative maintenance dollars don't increase at the same time that system is increasing, that you will develop a backlog once again. Isn't that reasonable, Tony, to expect?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And as sort of an industry rule of thumb, if you will, you need to be investing about 2.5% of the value of the asset into the asset on an annual basis to keep from building up a backlog. And that's correct. As you add more facilities to the system to maintain and take care of, then there is an additional investment you need to make in the amount of funds that you budget for facilities maintenance. But I'd also point out that the backlog on maintaining a facility, or the amount of money and investment you need to make on maintaining a facility that's 50 years old versus a facility that's 5 or 10 years old is a lesser amount. But it is an amount, nevertheless.
Sure, and I would absolutely agree with that. It probably is somewhat subjective, though, in terms of usage. I would think that if you develop a new park and it's new infrastructure, but it's tremendous amount of usage compared to an older park that maybe is not utilized as heavily, you'll probably have more maintenance issues more quickly on the heavier usage just from usage issues.
Mr. Chair, I'd say generally that is correct. One of the things that we're really trying to look at those issues as we renovate and renovate old facilities and build new ones is, are we using the right materials? What kinds of materials, and are there techniques in terms of design that we can put into these things that will help us avoid or delay or defer, having to make greater investments in maintenance? But you're correct. The more use it gets, generally the more repair it needs, the more you need to fund it.
Okay, thank you. Please move on.
Page 17, another aspect of our budget is park development. As we talk about program option packages later in phase two, we have some packages that will help us bring into service some properties which are either new to the department or properties which have been a part of the department but are now being developed and being introduced for use by the public. Most particularly, that's the Fort Yamhill site, Thompson's Mills, Chrissy Field in Curry County, and Harris Canyon State Park is another one of those examples. I just like to make mention right now that throughout our budget presentation, our budget package, we refer to the park in Washington County as Harris Canyon State Park. However, our commission just 2 weeks ago renamed that park in honor of Stubbs Stewart, so it's now called L.L. Stubbs Stewart Memorial State Park. But for the purposes of simplicity, it shows up here in all our discussions as Harris Canyon, and there are many of us who can't refer to it by Stubbs Stewart yet, but we will, I guess. Another significant aspect of our program is our grant program. Again, that's a program where we pass money through to local communities to help with quality of life issues and help local communities to be able to meet local recreational needs. Some examples of this are things like construction and development of a band shell in the city park in Canyonville, the Bear Creek Greenway Trail in the Medford area. Skate parks are an example of that. Many local communities, you wouldn't think that skate parks would be associated with state parks, but that's a local need and identified by local folks. and also acquisition of property to meet outdoor recreation needs. An example would be the property that Staten acquired on the North Santee Am. So our local grant program is very popular, as you can well imagine. In the current biennium, it's funded at $8 million, and we're looking to keep it at $8 million in the coming biennium. I pointed out under the bullet there that talks about county opportunity grants, I pointed out to you that in coming biennium 05-07, we will have approximately $9 million of RV registration fees that will be passed through directly to county park systems. They use that's bread and butter money to them. That's what they pay their staff work with. That's what they operate and maintain their facilities with in large measure, supplemented by other funds that they raise. But we also retain a portion of that, which is further passed out to the counties on a competitive basis for particular projects to county systems. On the heritage side of our system, we have several kinds of heritage grants that we provide, or heritage programs that we provide funding to. Some of them are federally funded. Some of them are funded through the Oregon Heritage Commission. Some of the examples of grants that we've provided for helping folks connect, and preserve and protect the heritage in their own communities are things like the grant to Southern Oregon Public Television, grants in Irigon, Joseph, and Seaside for promotion of the Lewis and Clark commemoration, other projects to repair the roof in Shenico School, Camp Sherman Community Hall, and other projects to help maintain historic cemeteries around the state. A small project to buy fencing or repair headstones or signage or control weeds in a historic cemetery might not seem like a lot of dollars to us, but, you know, in the local community, that generally means quite a lot. Again, another element of our program that you will see, and Representative Krieger's already asked about, and that's the acquisition program. Our intent in our acquisition program is to acquire properties for state park use and to assist local communities in doing that through the grant program. But the element or the budget decision unit that we have in our budget for $7 million is for acquisition of properties for our park system. I would point out to you that our method is that we acquire properties from willing sellers. Although the department does have condemnation authority, that's something that we choose not to use, and I can't imagine when that time would come. But we also enjoy the benefit of private landowners who call and would like to make a donation. If those kinds of things make sense for our system, you know, we can donate or we can purchase from them. So, again, as I mentioned earlier, our plans really are to target our acquisitions to meet the current demand and future needs as well.
Senator?
Don't they also call and offer to sell sometimes? I mean, you gave two alternatives. One was we can condemn. Sometimes they call and want to donate. But during my career here, I think at least one or two pieces of property have been kind of offered for sale and became somewhat of a hot potato over time. Is that not true?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, that's correct. And maybe I should just strike the word condemnation from my conversation, because that's not a method that we use, nor do we intend to use it. But you are correct. There are donations of property which are made, and also private owners who come to us with an offer to sell. One donation that we received in your area recently, within the last year or so, was a parcel which adjoins Tryon Creek State Park, which was donated by the family to the park. So that was an example. The only costs that we incurred, I think, were the costs of doing the transfer action and so forth.
Very good. Continue.
Again, heritage conservation, as I mentioned, is one of the operational elements of our department. Our role in heritage conservation, besides having sort of a regulatory role and a responsibility under the Federal National Historic Preservation Act and state laws, is to help connect Oregonians with with their communities and with the state and with the you know, and with the heritage that Oregon has. Some of the examples of how our heritage programs are involved with local areas would be our programs where we've provided assistance to the cities of Albany and Baker City, Corvallis and Jacksonville, in renovation of downtown areas, restoration of historic houses. We've worked with the Lewis and Clark, with the Umatilla tribe, on a project to do some language preservation work through the Lewis and Clark program, or providing grants through our Lewis and Clark funding program. We've provided funding to the Eastern Oregon Fire Museum. There are a whole host of small programs that we administer and assistance that we provide to local communities in helping preserve the heritage of the state in the area. That sort of summarizes what I had to present, sort of a top-level overview. I'd be happy to answer any other questions you might have. And as I said, Mr. Wright and Mr. Hamrick and Ms. Tyndall would take you in a little bit more detail in each of those major organizational areas.
We've got Representative Krieger, then Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, can we have time, have one of your staff get a hold of regarding the historic cemeteries?
Senator Nelson.
Has your department been subject to an audit by the Secretary of State or anybody recently? What has been any results from that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, yes. In fact, in our package here, we have a summary of Secretary of State's audits that we have undergone in the last few years. There are a couple which have been completed, but yet the reports aren't out. One is on... the ballot measure requires a review of the expenditure of Measure 66 funds by those agencies that get it, and that review has been completed by the Secretary of State for the previous biennium, but the report isn't out. We don't anticipate any issues with that one. We're also being included in a Secretary of State audit on fleet management, and it's good to talk to the details of that, but actually we were a bit ahead of what the audit was trying to achieve, and so I think we were very successful in the results of that, although the final results in that audit aren't available yet. We also were recognized by the Secretary of State's audit for our financial system, and that audit was recently completed.
Tim Dingfold.
Sure. I have a question on page 17 under acquisition. The first line you talked about, I'm assuming, is this some type of strategic plan target 2014? So I'm just not familiar with it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dinkler, correct. Target 2014 was is our strategic vision, or our sort of guiding document, if you will, for operation of our park system from now to the year 2014. And there are eight major strategies in that, and one of those strategies is acquire properties to meet future demands.
Chair,
yes.
Follow up. Would it be possible to get a copy of that? Because I think it would be helpful as we're looking at the budget. At least, I don't know if everybody wants a copy, but I certainly would be interested if that's possible.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfeller, we certainly can provide that.
Thank you.
Director Wood, along that line, that same sentence says acquisition of new park properties is the number one goal adopted by the department as expressed in Target 2014. So does that mean then that you're saying your number one goal as a department is to acquire new properties?
Mr. Chair, I would say that maybe that ought to be more appropriately expressed as it's a priority. It isn't. None of these goals are to the exclusion of another, but one of the expressed concerns of our commission is to be sure that by the time we reach 2013, 2014, we have invested sufficiently to meet the needs of the system for the future. And again, that's obviously within balance of other expenditure needs and and accomplishments of the other seven goals and strategies as part of that 2014.
Well, thank you for explaining that. It you know, when I see the words number one goal, and it seems to be elevated to the primary goal of the department. So, and I was curious. I kind of share Senator Bates' sentiment on that acquisitions, while they are part of your direction, it seemed to me that maintenance and preventative maintenance and the backlog would be of a higher priority than acquisition being your number one goal.
Sure, I understand that. And again, what we're trying to strike here is the balance of having a system that will meet recreation needs in the future and contribute to the quality of life of Oregon, but not at the expense of operating and maintaining the current system we have. I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to make that point.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. You know, you've got this graph here with the lottery going up like that, but then it plateaus out, and there's nothing saying that actually isn't going to continue on. But it may not. Eventually, the market will be saturated for lottery, even if it was renewed. And you've got more acquisition for more land so that we can bring that number of visitor per acre down, which is obviously, I assume, your goal. And I'm not saying it's not a bad way. But then you got this year showing millions of people that visited the park. And do you make projections on that? I mean, these, I see you go 2005, 2006, and 2007. Actually, if those are the numbers, you're going to reduce from 2004. What is the optimum number of people per acre per year? And then can you also with the number you'd like to reach, and I imagine there's some national
representative numbers. Just forgive me for interrupting, but actually what you're the ground you're covering today is precisely what we're going to be talking about tomorrow, the performance measure issue.
All right.
Kind of in depth, and so you might just want to wait if you could.
I would be happy to. Yeah. Forgive me.
We can have perhaps a more in-depth discussion.
Correct.
It's a great point, and you're headed in the right direction there. It's just probably better for tomorrow.
Very good. I'll wait. I will hold until tomorrow.
And I had one last question to ask you. You had mentioned that the RV fee, that is the pass-through portion to counties. Did you say that was estimated to be somewhere around $9 million?
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe it's roughly $9 million that's passed through this.
The numbers that I have here is actually $11 million. Are you forecasting a couple of million less?
I'm not sure. That might include the money that's retained for opportunity grants. So.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, it would. And that would be the difference, Susie?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Okay. All right. Members, any additional questions of staff or anyone? Okay. Well, in that case, we're going to go ahead and adjourn for today.
We're going to do the priorities.
That's right.
Take that and adjourn.
So, reopen.
We are reopened. We are reopened indeed.
And I wasn't sure if the department was done. They had each of the program areas they wanted to do a brief overview on. We could move to the priorities if you think you've gotten enough information about what the agency is about.
Members, do you want to dive deeper into any additional review in terms of operations, heritage, administration? Okay, then why don't we go ahead and go to priorities then? That'd be excellent.
Mr. Chair, I'm disappointed.
I didn't get. I can say so is your staff, right?
We're going to accommodate.
They will get their opportunity, I'm sure.
Indeed.
Phase two.
In phase two. Correct.
Indeed.
I would kind of defer to your guidance, Susie, on how to approach this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I would suggest is that you go to the department-wide priority page, which is you've got your legal size one. There's also a copy of it in the book, but it's smaller print. And
If you go to the second to the last page, it's the department-wide priorities. It has all of the programs in department priority order. And we can walk through that with the agency and then go through the 10% reduction. And as we look at these priorities, the 10% reduction should actually follow what their highest and lowest priorities are when they start telling you what they would cut if they had to make a reduction.
Susie, we are ranking in the 10% reductions. Those are at the top. Those are actually the first reductions they would take.
Yes.
On this chart, and then we would work downward.
Yes.
Okay.
But we're going to start on what their priorities are.
Priorities are first.
Right.
Very good.
That's the page of search with debt service at the top.
Yes. Yes.
What number is in there?
You got right, yeah.
It's all legal, the same thing.
Legal documents.
Yeah.
It's on the last page. Go to the last second page. To the last page.
Small writing.
Second to the last page.
Very small writing.
It's priority.
The last page is 10% reduction. The one before the department-wide priorities.
It's going to be done.
So.
Nobody doesn't sing. Agency, they out the piece of paper. I get it in a book. Get it. A sequence of numbers.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
are we all on the same page?
You don't have numbers on the pages?
No.
What help?
No.
Okay.
I'll just look over your shoulder to make sure you're on the page.
That's this one right here. It's actually upside down on the other side. This is priority.
Correct.
That is the one.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'll say department-wide priorities of governor's recommended budget.
Okay.
Please.
Chair, members of the committee. The first item that we have that we show as the highest priority for funding on the prioritization is debt service. I would just point out that there's about $3.1 million that we are obligated to pay off on the lottery-backed bond that the department took out for $15 million back in 97-99. So this debt service continues in our budget through 2013. So that is an obligation we must meet.
Senator Bates,
what's your interest rate on that bond?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I don't know what it is offhand, but we have that.
See if you have an option for an early payoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that's one of the things that our commission is considering is an early pay. Actually, the bond can't be paid off, but what we can do is essentially put the money in an account that will
raise
will
interest
pay
and pay it off.
Well, actually, no. My colleagues here are challenging me to get through this discussion without using the word defeasance.
that sounds way too much like malfeasance. I like that.
Makes me nervous. Yeah.
But it would, by paying the bond off or by defeasing the bond, it would allow us to put about $6.7 million in an account that would continue to draw interest, would pay off the bond during the rest of the duration of the bond. The bond can't be retired early, and it also would save us some money in interest over time. And we are considering that, and we'll talk to you about that when we talk in phase two. But, yes, that is a consideration that our commission is.
Bottom line is it's not the type of bond that you have a right to call. You can't call a bond then.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's correct.
Senator Nelson.
That thing, I mean, the total funds is $3 million. That's the total amount that you owe.
Per biennium. That's the payment.
That's the payment.
For the next four bienniums?
Yes,
biennium.
Each biennium.
And you
pay
that since 90.
It's called compound interest. It drives us all crazy.
I know it. I mean, but that's a huge amount of money that we paid back. For a $15 million bond, is that what it was originally?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, this bond issue was a decision that the legislature made before Measure 66 dollars became available. It was a way to get some resource into the agency when at a time when we didn't have any other source of funds to assist them. And
so what's the total amount that's going to be paid then with principal and interest here?
We'll get that information
for
you.
It should be close to 30, I think.
I have that somewhere also. So
15-year bond.
Yeah. We've never done that, of course.
No, this body has never bonded short-term operating debt with long-term debt before.
No,
so.
Luckily there's no bolt of lightning coming down.
Mr. Chair, I would point out that the $15 million bond was really the start of our facility investment program, and that was its purpose at the time it was purchased.
And again, you are you're required to have that paid off before Measure 66 dollars expired,
Mr. Chair.
Or is that just the goal?
I think that's the arrangements on the sale of the bond.
Okay.
I don't think that there's really any. It's coincidental. The relationship.
Because you had, in fact, taken the bond out prior to Measure 66 funds being available, so it is just coincidental. Okay. But timely. It would make sense that in case Measure 66 goes away, that you would have as least amount of debt load as possible at the time.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, very good.
The remainder of our prioritization here, other than the debt service, really is intended to kind of preserve the basic business functions of the department necessary to operate and maintain our park properties. By minimizing sort of the interruption of service to and also still complying with state and federal mandates that are required for primarily through our historic preservation program. And it also distributes the 10% cuts generally where they could be best absorbed or would least impact the delivery of other services. The second item here is Director's Officer Commission. The commission, that essentially funds the leadership of the department, if you will. There's not a whole lot of funds here, but it's basically our head office operation and includes support that we provide to our commission. The next item on there is field operations. Again, if you'll recall, earlier in the presentation, we talked about field operations being the operation management of the parks in the field and where most of our visitors come in contact with our department. We looked here at a reduction of about $5.7 million. Really, that would that reduction would be some money that we have in our operations budget that we would intend to get for matching to grants for projects across the system. And so that we would forego seeking grants in that amount of money, and therefore we wouldn't have to match it with that amount of money. Item four, the central field support. Central field support in our budgeting terminology funds unemployment. It also is where we deposit our funds for paying out our fire assessments, contracts for law enforcement to state police, state and county police, state police and sheriff's departments, local departments or local police departments, and operation of our radio system that we use for management and for emergency operations, and also what we call our Division 2 fleet. Division 2 fleet is the pieces of equipment that we have in our park system to operate and maintain our system that aren't available through the DAS motor pool, that aren't available for lease through that. Things such as backhoes, dump trucks, those kinds of things. So in the last biennium, we asked for a package of $750,000 that we put toward a modernization, if you will, of our Division 2 fleet. And what we would do, and we've already embarked upon that, but what we would do, that $750,000 is carried into this budget as well. And what we would do is we would slow down that part of the program
And so we would save approximately $436,000 out of our central field support portion of our budget. Item 5, financial services, is the accounting, bookkeeping, purchasing, contracting operations of the department. And regardless of sort of our level of service within the department, we still need to have those services provided across the department. So there's no reduction there. Item 6 is park administration. That's really our assistant director for operations. Some funds that are in that account for supporting some projects and supplies and services. So we didn't project any reduction in that. On the next, I'm not sure how you're paged here, but the next item is item 7, State Historic Preservation Office. Again, most of the funds that are in that program, some of them, as you can see, are federal funds, but most of the responsibilities within that decision unit or within that portion of our budget have to do with federal programs and state programs in terms of statutorily required programs. And so that's why you see no reduction there. Personnel and safety services are the folks who do our recruiting for all personnel actions in the department and also help us with our safety program and risk management. And if we continue to operate the park system in the field, don't take reductions there, and we still have a whole host of personnel actions that need to occur. Bringing on the number of folks that we bring on for seasonal employees during the summertime is a large job, and it's starting now for this summer. So we would need to continue to support those services. Item 9, where it says lottery funded investments, what that refers to, that would just be a reduction in the facility investment program. That would just make that a smaller program than the $21 million that we're asking there. Other facility investments match is the same thing. We have a portion of our revenue planned for match for other kinds of grants. Could be federal land and water conservation grants, other grant programs. We would forego that expenditure as well. Information systems, item 11 on the list, is $662,000, and what that is we have generally a 4-year replacement cycle for our information systems hardware and some of our software, and so we would just defer this 1 year's worth of upgrade in our information systems program. Reservations Northwest is really sort of the engine, if you will, that drives visitation in the fields. We would need to continue to maintain our level of service at Reservations Northwest in order to ensure that we sustain our revenue base with regard to camping fees and so forth, and providing customer services to the parks that we would hope to keep open with this program. Item 13, Public Services. The portion of our department that deals with advertising, marketing, as well as development of our brochures, maintenance and operation of our website. In order, again, to continue to provide service and to continue to promote use of the system, it would be important to preserve our public services responsibilities there as well. Resource management and planning does our master planning, also manages our forestry program, which does bring some revenue to our department, also helps us address issues like forest hazard issues, like fire hazards and hazardous trees in and around high use areas. Also, a part of this would be our Ocean Shores permitting responsibilities that we have to serve the public in if they want to install Ocean Shore protective structures on the ocean shore. Recreational programs is sort of a combination of programs, but volunteer services as well as trails and interpretation. And what we would do is we would reduce some of the funding that we have in our interpretive side of our recreation programs to see that savings there. The Heritage Commission has, again, responsibilities in statute and appointed by the governor. There aren't a whole lot of savings to be had there. Operations and engineering, that element there is necessary if we're going to carry out our facility investment program. So thus the staff that manages the program, manages contracts, and manages projects. Item 19 is acquisition, and we show a reduction there of a 10% reduction in the acquisition program, which would reduce that by $700,000. The grants program would be, we show a reduction there of...
Yeah, Susie, hang on a moment.
Tim, I think you skipped over 18, the assistant director.
Oh, I'm sorry. 18, that says assistant director, and that's really the administration or management of, that's Janice's position primarily, and some S&S support that goes to oversee the administrative staff.
She doesn't get all that money.
She doesn't represent. She doesn't.
Talking out of
turn. Well, hopefully no job applications otherwise.
Now I think we're on 20. Pass-through grants. Again, that shows a reduction of a reduction of about $1.4 million. The grant administration, we think it's very important to maintain our grants programs as best we can because, again, that still is passed through to local economies, and it means a lot locally. In order to do that, we need some sort of an administrative operation to oversee that, and that's what the grant administration portion of our budget is. Also, if we continue to receive money through the Land and Water Conservation Fund, you know, there's a large sort of federal activity involved in managing money that's passed through from the federal government. So we still need to retain staff to do that.
Representative Dingfeld?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this package you would be proposing as a reduction, getting rid of the entire program, both the pass-through grants and therefore the administration. Is that right?
No.
Okay, so can you just, maybe I'm confused. So are you saying you're going to reduce it, the program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfeld, that's correct. We're not eliminating either. We're just reducing the pass-through grants program by $1.4 million and no changes to the grant administration
okay.
program.
A follow-up to that? Ma'am, but that's okay.
I said sure.
Oh, I thought you
sure.
said yes, sir. I'm like, okay. So I guess I'm confused because these are pass-through grants. They're pass-through from the federal government. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, not in all cases. There's like $8 million in our budget of our lottery fund revenue that we pass through to local units of government. So it's not all federal money. In fact, most of it is not. Most,
okay. Mm-hmm. So just another point of clarification. So by cutting back in 10% of this pass-through grant program, and pass-through could be state funds, federal funds, whatever, you're passing it through to some other entity, county, park district, city. It'll save us because of the reduction in administration. You're saying it'll save us $1.4 million. Is that, am I reading that right?
Chair Representative Dickfelder, actually, no, that doesn't have any impact at all on the administration, item 21 there. The impact is just a reduction to the amount of money that's available for grants,
okay.
And that would be reduced by a $1.4 million.
And that money then would be used for something else. Is that correct? I'm just trying to figure out what benefit, how does that save us money? So we're going to use that to redirect that money to something else.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, for the purposes of this department, the 10% reduction is probably just an exercise, unless you want to redirect those resources to another part of the budget.
Okay.
Inside
the budget.
Inside, you can't move it out as budget.
Okay, so that's what I was trying to get at. How would this be a cost savings for us?
There isn't.
It's not.
Okay.
It's like in forestry.
Yeah, thank you. And the governor asked all agencies and departments to do the 10% reduction in prioritization and all that. All your money's dedicated to you. We can't spend it anywhere else. I guess my question is then, why did you all go through this exercise?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffer, the legislature requires agencies to present a 10% reduction list with their budgets.
Even if
the governor
didn't
require
dedicated.
It. Your body required it. It's in law.
Well, and I just want to, the reason I ask that question is for clarification.
People who pay fees, I mean, the legislature gets criticized for increasing fees or and not lowering fees, and so you want to be looking at these kinds of agencies that are charging fees to generate their revenues, making sure that those fees or those other funds and investments are being made in the places that you think are the most important. And so this, while it seems like an exercise, it also is very instructive in how this agency is going about doing their work for the public good.
Just so, may I? So these are just areas you folks recommended, if you had to make a 10% reduction, would be the best places. This is your recommendation, if you had to reduce by 10%, which you can't.
Chair Representative Shoffler, that's correct. Okay. If we had to make some redistribution or some savings here, that would be our recommendation.
Right. Thank you very much.
But just to, can I just finish on this point? I brought that up for the, partially because I was a little confused, but now I just want to clarify. I mean, you could, if you wanted to, take that money and redirect it, for instance, to pay down the backlog if, because it's not just going into nowhere because we get that money. I mean, it would be redirected for some other purpose instead of going through the grants program if we decided to direct you to do that, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dinkfelder, that's correct. But what this does represent would be, that would mean we would be making the decision to reduce the local grants program and put that money someplace else. But yes, mm-hmm. You're correct.
Okay, thank you.
I think that I was that a difference. Give me some hope here. We looked at, you know, the forestry, it was the same thing, and my comment was, well, we've proven ourselves to be idiots. And I have to say, I think this 10% reduction thing is a waste of this agency's time. However, the discussion about where the money is going inside the agency and what your values for doing it, I think, is extremely important. Because, I mean, you already heard my views on this, which are different than the agencies. They have a commission of citizens that looks at this with you, and they have probably looked at this and made suggestions to you, and that's where it all comes from. But we are the ones that control the purse here, ultimately, and the governor has to sign off if he agrees to this. So I think we have a lot of leeway here. Look at this. I mean, I've heard questions about acquisitions today, which concern me, and I like to see them, if they are really going to get ready for something that might happen to them in 9 years, do they get rid of their debt, do they get everything up to speed, and then I haven't heard a discussion, but I had to leave for a few minutes of what your capacity is right now, where expected to be in 9 years. There's a lot of unanswered questions that prudent thinking here will possibly lead you to where you want to spend your money over the next biennium. And you are a flush department. I mean, this is not the usual budget we're looking at here. Nobody else has this kind of increase.
Chair, Senator Bates, we're very aware of that.
Plus, we have a huge cost savings from waterless urinals, right? I didn't see that in the budget, but it's true.
Well, that woke me up, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's true.
That's, Mr. Chair, we ready to close.
Yeah, we're going to get close.
It's been a discussion in the Water Committee for 2 years.
I'm sure it has. All right, Director Wood, you're almost done here. I think you just have one non-limited funds or grant administration, that's it.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
The last two pieces.
The
question I have for you is I have some difficulty in understanding why facility investments and other facility investments, which are match, and acquisitions are not higher up in the ranking in terms of your overall goals as an agency. It would seem to me that I don't understand why the administrative figures are broken out in the manner that they are. What we've seen in other agencies, and I don't know why you've chosen to do it this, but we've seen in other agencies, you know, the administrative fees are basically just so much is allotted kind of equally across the program areas. And so I don't understand that, but it seemed to me that
that given your earlier statement here about acquisitions being your number one goal, that I'm really surprised to see it so very, I mean, it's number 19 on your list. I would think that from my viewpoint, I frankly share Senator Bates' concern about investments in facilities and getting the repairs up into shape, and that ought to be very, very high on your list. And then with acquisitions being a higher ranking than other things. So I would just offer that comment to you and any comments you might have in response to that.
Mr. Chair, that's a good point. With regard to acquisitions, if we reduced acquisitions by 10%, that would bring us down to $6.3 million in acquisition budget. That's an acquisition budget that's $2.3 million greater than it has been in previous biennia. So $700,000 is a lot of money, but as far as the overall impact on the program, it doesn't devastate the program, if you will. And that probably doesn't fully answer your question, but maybe over the next day or so we can get to that a little
Mr.
more.
Chair?
Yes.
Tim, are you saying that when you when the agency did this reviewed what your priorities were, that you looked at your number one and 22 priorities in terms of whether you needed to be funded or not, and not necessarily at your 2014 goals as a criteria for determining what would be your number one priorities or your top priorities versus lower priorities? Is that,
Mr. Chair, Susie, I think if what you're asking is what we looked at when we prioritized was not that we would eliminate some particular level of service, that some levels of service within our mission would be reduced. And so I don't know if that answers your question. I'm not.
Well, I guess I'm just trying to reiterate Representative Crump's question about acquisition being 19 on your list, but being number one goal in 2014 ought to be up number one or number two on this list, even though that might be the first place that you go to make a reduction, if you had to make a reduction.
Yes, sir. They've done your matches exactly. This is the last place they go because it's number one on the list.
No. Their number one priority. Yeah. Their last place they go is debt service because they're obligated to pay that. And then the next place that they go, the last place would be director's office. So this is their top priority for funding. This is their lowest priority.
I understand that, but you didn't just say one of your top priorities is acquisition.
Senator Nelson, Senator Nelson.
Just overall, response to all this, I mean, it seems to me that our perspective, even as senators and representatives, is provide the services on the street or in the parks. So, I mean, I see that, like, the director's office and the commission, we don't take anything out of that because that's at the Salem level, so we don't want to touch that. But our pushback is, why don't those services, why don't we keep that recreation programs out there? It's only $31,000, but I think we could find $31,000 at the director's office, and that would give services to those people in the park. I mean, it's not so big of an issue in this department, but it's in the other agency budgets that we're hearing or other agency things that I've seen, is that we don't touch what's happening in Salem, but then the pushback we get from our constituents is, you're cutting out my service at the home and home base, and my caseload worker in human services has 300 clients that she's got to take care of. But we won't cut anything at the state level. I mean, that was just kind of my reaction to all this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I understand what you're saying, but one of the key elements of our prioritization here has been to maintain the level of services in the field, the 31,000 for interpretive services notwithstanding. So, and in order to maintain that level in the field, there still needs to be some upper level, support to do things like budget development and this sort of, interaction with other agencies and sort of the administrative responsibilities of the department. So this really is designed to ensure that the services at the field level are essentially not
not touched.
So what's missing here is your criteria that you use to come up with this ranking. You said preserving basic business functions was very important and maintaining services in the field was up there. And then, so you had some criteria that you used that you didn't document here.
That's correct, and thank you. Because you're right. The idea was to maintain the services in the field, and the second priority is maintain the business functions that support the services in the field. I probably didn't articulate that well earlier.
Well, okay. I am probably going to ask you, member of this committee, to reconsider changing your rankings, to be frank with you, because I, in my opinion, field ops ought to be number two, debt service clearly number one, field operations ought to be number two, because that's how you, first of all, it's $55 million of your budget, and it's what your people do. You have people out there that are park rangers and are out there doing your operations in your field, and I would think that facility investments, maintenance, those types of things would be very high on your priority list. So I would like to see the criteria. I do understand what you're saying, though, Tim, in regards to your explanation about acquisition. If you had to reduce it 10%, then it doesn't impact it, and that's partly why you ranked it as low as you did. From my perspective, you have to understand what we're looking for consistency in all these other budgets and looking at how they're ranking their programs, and this isn't exactly how other people are doing it, so it could have been confusing in that regard. Additional comments, members? We should get, yes, Senator Bates.
Tomorrow we're going into benchmarks and performance measures.
Performance measures, yeah.
Okay, can we make a comment what we might want to be looking at tomorrow? Would that be helpful at this point?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I put on at your place a list of the questions that I've given the agency on the performance measures, along with, and in bold on there are questions that the co-chairs have asked that the subcommittee look at. Behind, in that staple package, is the agency's initial response. They didn't have a chance to look at the bolded questions, and they'll have that information tomorrow. And we can just go through the measures and the questions at the same time.
Now,
to look at that material ahead of time.
Touch briefly on the 10% reductions list. I mean, it's kind of a moot point, frankly, in this agency, but on the other hand, you have offered it up, and it would be good to have your thoughts on that.
Mr. Chair, he kind of went through what he would, where he would reduce, and the only additional piece would be the order in which they would those reductions, and that would be the last page in your packet.
Down at the bottom, it says page 14 of 14.
The last page is numbered.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
With all due respect, these are the kind of questions I was expecting to ask tomorrow. I already had a couple of questions. I'd like to give them a heads up in advance. It might be a help for them. One, there's nothing in the performance measures that helps me know what your capacity is and what percentage of that capacity is really being used. That's important for the question of acquisitions. If you have a huge capacity, it's only being partial.
That's the last question. Or is another question? In the bold.
There's a statement of how many people are visiting the parks, but I'm talking about.
He's just giving them the heads up now.
Didn't I ask that question?
I believe so. If you haven't, we're working on the answer.
Here it is. Which number? It's number 8 on the question. But they haven't answered that question yet. So that is one of the questions.
The question I start is, what is happening? What is OPRD's capacity to increase acquisitions? Is that your question?
Yeah.
That's not my question.
Okay.
My question is, what is your capacity in comparison to usage? So it helps us decide if you need to do acquisitions.
We'll be prepared to answer.
Thank you.
Okay. Great.
And it might be helpful to ask that question in comparison to other states, too. What's your capacity in comparison to other states' park systems and their capacities? How do we look compared to others?
Excellent questions, both.
We're number one as far as usage.
I think you said we were eighth per acre.
Number one.
I heard that earlier, but it didn't quite. It looked different at different places in the presentation, I thought.
On page number.
On page 12, we're
number one as far as business portfolio.
I think what you're asking, Senator Shields, is how do we compare with other states in terms of capacity,
our capacity.
And utilization, all of that molded together.
Are we approaching Yosemite? Or?
Since we're giving them heads up for tomorrow, you have a heads up for tomorrow also, Representative.
Didn't I hear you say, though, visitors per acre, we were eighth in the country?
Didn't I hear you say that?
And if our goal is to be number one, I'm not against being the best parks in the world. Don't get me wrong.
Mr. Chair, Reverend Shopler, I think when we have our discussion about performance measures tomorrow, we'll talk about whether that's a reasonable goal to have. And frankly, we've struggled a bit with finding the right measure. And I'm not sure that visitors per acre is the right measure. Acres per visitor or what. But I appreciate that, and if you all can provide us any guidance and where we, you know, what might be a good tangible measure, we would appreciate it.
Well, we are likely to have that discussion tomorrow. You have some quick stats there?
No, I would just say that we're second in visitors per acre.
Right. Okay, very good. Second person. Right. Well, that's a capacity, I suppose. Yes, yeah. Representative Shopler.
That means we have the second most visitors per acre.
That's correct.
Right. We want to be the last.
I would really think that all the Eastern Oregon cattlemen would be very happy with that statistic. It sounds like we've got a herd of cattle, you know, so many per acre in our parks.
We just can't resist. All right, with that,
we're going to hoof it on out of here.
We are hoofed out of here. We are adjourned until tomorrow.